All right, from the Squamish Chief.
This is the Squamish Sound. I'm Keely Bartlett.
And I'm Stephen Chua. This is the second episode of our weekly podcast.
You'll hear the story behind the story as we take you into the newsroom. We'll talk about what did and didn't get into the newspaper this week. And on the show today, we're covering two major tourism developments proposed in Squamish. Stephen will tell you about the 40 downtown customers who lost power.
Also, we have an update from the first episode of the podcast. We talked about the RCMP arresting the most notorious fentanyl dealer in Squamish. He will appear in court, and we'll update that story as soon as we find out more. We're now going to be shifting over and talking a little bit more about our top story, Sea to Tree to Sky. It was reported on by you, Keely, and it was about the Sea to Sky gondola getting some new developments going on. One thing that we found really interesting was that this was widely played in a lot of media outlets, but, you know, the perks of having a local paper, we were able to get a hold of some information, specifically you were able to get a hold of some information that not a lot of other places were able to find out. Can you kind of expand on what that was?
Yeah, so I contacted the general manager for the Sea to Sky gondola, Kirby Brown, when we got the press release. And so he told us a little bit more information that the other outlets didn't report on because they went just off of what the press release said. Mm-hmm. So we found out specifically the measurements for the walkway that they're planning on putting in. It's supposed to be a 34 meter tall spiral structure that goes through the panorama trail. The measurements of note are that the walkway itself is going to be 8 feet wide, and the grade of the incline is going to be between 4 and 5 degrees, is what Brown told me. That means that it's going to be, or it should be, more accessible for people with wheelchairs or with strollers. But we also found out when I spoke to Kirby Brown that this isn't the first major infrastructure change that the gondola will have seen since it started in 2014. They're also planning on changing the power source from diesel-generated power to BC Hydro power. Mm-hmm. So that includes everything at the summit. That includes the restaurant, the gift shop, and the gondola itself.
Mm-hmm. And what kind of implications would like a power change have in that case?
It could reduce their carbon footprint quite extensively. And they're going to invest approximately $2 million into that conversion if it goes through the proper approvals. And that would happen actually before this walkway would be finished. So the walkway is proposed to start construction in 2019 and be open in 2020.
And we're going to be making a little bit of a transition here. We're bringing you from the top of the mountain to inside a canyon where another development is being proposed. One thing that really stood out to me was the method in which it was generating funds. I hear this development, the proposed development, that is the Squamish Canyon, didn't use your average crowdfunder. Keely, like, you covered this story as well. Can you kind of tell us what was different in this case?
I spoke to the Squamish Canyon founder, Robin Sherry, is that instead of going through a crowdfunding campaign, which people normally would donate money, instead they're buying shares. So it's a crowd equity model, and they had 31 local investors buy into this model between October and mid-January. So he's actually closed it because they've met their minimum requirement for this period of time, and that was $282,000. Mm. So the total price of the project is estimated to be $4 to $5 million. So they are going to be looking for different partners. But he said that the crowd equity model was a version that appealed to his company because it lets people in the community be more involved. And instead of watching developments happen and not having as much of a say in it, if they are part owners or shareholders, they can help keep that company accountable to what they proposed originally. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right. That's really interesting. So it's really fostering a sense of owning and being a part of this as opposed to just kind of like, you know, spectating from the sidelines and just like twiddling your fingers, right?
Mm-hmm, exactly. And worrying about how this is going to impact your community.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, just another tidbit that I heard in council is that it's going to be going for a temporary use permit hearing in the next few months. So just as a note, we're going to be following up on that and telling you as much as we can as soon as we find out more about that. I guess there was also one more thing that we had to cover as well.
Yeah, so this was your beat, Stephen. But over the weekend, I'm sure everyone heard or felt the Arctic wind, some more than others, when power was knocked out for a night in downtown. I know where I was in Brackendale, we also had power out for a few hours, but 40 customers in downtown were affected.
Yeah.
So tell me about what happened downtown, because it was a different situation than the power just being knocked out in Brackendale.
Right, yeah. So what happened was, I'm sure all of you guys are very well aware that we had a pretty substantial Arctic outflow, and it was just, it was a crazy, crazy experience. Very cold and very, very windy. And basically what happened is the Cleveland Gardens development in downtown, it has this really big tarp covering it. And what happened was the wind was just like coming in at such a force. Like in some cases, I saw that the meteorologist, local meteorologist Jason Ross here, estimated to be around like 90 kilometers an hour or more. So with wind like that, tarp comes right off. But what happens after that is once it rips, it kind of started fluttering in the wind. And it eventually hit power cables on at least one occasion. Wow. And what happened after that was, power got cut for 40 customers starting like around late afternoon / early evening on Sunday. And it was later restored at around 5 a.m. Yeah. If your power was cut out in downtown, now you know why.
You were also there and you saw it firsthand.
Absolutely. Yeah, it was really interesting. We had first responders kind of positioning themselves around the development. There were people, with their camera phones and stuff taking pictures. It was a very short period of time before it put up on Facebook. And, the following day we followed up on that just to kind of see what was happening. And generally what happens when an incident like that, when safety could be an issue, WorkSafe BC does have a look into that. We did find that they were sending in one of their officers to inspect the site. You know, the story behind the story, why we like to hold this, is how I initially reported this. I reported this as an investigation. But later what happened was WorkSafe BC said, yes, we did send an officer. Yes, they are inspecting it, but it's not an investigation.
So what's the difference between having an inspector on scene and having an investigation take place?
To the average person, this is basically what an investigation is, like if we're taking it as like, common vernacular. But for WorkSafe BC, what they try to do is they try to categorize their responses at different grades, at different levels. The response that they sent out, having a person go in and inspecting it, that is a lower level grade. And they wanted to make a kind of a distinction. When they say investigation, that implies, at least to according to the spokesperson that I was talking to, that implies something a lot more serious, like a possible injury, possible death. And they send in a different kind of team also to inspect, but it would presumably be a bit more thorough, and there would be a little bit more of, I guess, weight and gravity as to what the findings and stuff would be. And it does present like kind of the challenge of reporting things in a way, balancing the need to, use words that are like easily accessible to the public. Like most people, if you ask, an inspector to go in and start, prodding around, that's an investigation. But at the same time, a lot of the times these corporations or organizations or government bodies, they use common words in different ways as technical terms. So in this case, we chose to amend that and shift the way that we put the headline out to a response as opposed to investigation this time.
All right.
Okay, so for this next segment, Editor's Pick, we're going to bring in our editor, Jennifer Thuncher, and she's going to share with us what the top stories in her mind were. So, Jen, tell us what you think is the editor's choice in this case.
This week, I wanted to talk about two stories, actually. The Squamish Canyon and the Sea to Sky Gondola's new walkway.
I guess we'll take one at a time first. Let's start with the first.
What was interesting, actually, was comparing the two stories and the reaction to the two stories. So both are about walkways through the forest. sort of imagine the Capilano Suspension Bridge kind of idea.
Right, right.
Where they have the treetop adventures. So the gondola in 24 hours after we put up that story had about 1,000 reactions, meaning likes or, you know.
Right. Anytime someone interacts with the story on Facebook, that's the measure, basically.
Right. And yeah. It had 323 shares in 24 hours. So it was a really big story. Mm-hmm. And most of the reactions on Facebook, at least, were positive. There was one or two negative. But in the time that it's been up, which has been 24 hours, it's been mostly positive. So then let's look at the Squamish Canyon, which has been up a week. Just short of a week.
Right.
And it had 12 shares and about 280 reactions. So overall, less of a reaction.
Okay.
Which is interesting. But the most interesting part was, even though it's also a walkway, it got a lot more negative comments, really negative in some cases, saying no or don't put that there. So I found that really interesting because if you pull back and look at it, they're similar projects.
Yeah.
But one was more acceptable and one... people took it a little bit differently.
So, you know, given that these are two like pretty similar projects, you know, they're both walkways, both kind of like scenic nature, touristy kind of items. What do you think is the factor that makes people seem more enthusiastic towards one and lukewarm or possibly even negative towards the other?
I think the negative reactions were from locals, and you and I have talked about this before, about other stories that we've done that talk about going into the backcountry, and it's the people who live here who are used to going to these spots, who are used to seeing nature as it is, are quite resistant at this point because of the influx of tourism that we've had, I think, to seeing even more people going into areas they consider somewhat sacred, even though obviously at one point where the gondola is was sacred, but it seems to be, okay, they've already started that, let them go for it there, but don't come into these other areas. And I should say too, in defense of the canyon, it wasn't pristine. It had been logged. It's just 15-year-old growth there.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, thanks so much for your time, Jen.
Thanks.
So new to the paper this week is our crossword, the Squamish Search. So this is a little different from the other crossword that we have farther back with the horoscope. This one, you can find the answers to the clues in the stories in the same issue of the newspaper. Squamish Sound is brought to you by the Squamish Chief. The music for this episode was produced by Stephen Chua, cover photo by Clayton Matthews. Have a story tip? Give us a call at 604-892-9161. Send an email to news@squamishchief.com. You can read our stories online at squamishchief.com or subscribe to the newspaper and have the news delivered to your door every week.